Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday, Election Day edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review is off doing Election Day coverage with The Blaze TV later today. In his stead, as usual, Andrew Johnson of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Andrew, we're finally here. Election Day 2014. We've pretty much been bracing for it since conservatives were banging their head against the walls after President Obama was reelected 2 years ago. But a little bit more optimism this time around. And we'll get your insights on what you think we're likely to see once all the votes are counted, whether it's today or weeks from now. But real quickly, we both voted today. Anything stand out to you when you went to vote?
I'm actually in Virginia's 10th congressional district, where there is one of the few semi-competitive House races. So it's Barbara Comstock, the Republican, versus John Faust, the Democrat. It was my first election here in Virginia since I moved back here about a month ago. I actually grew up in that district, grew up in that area. So for me, it was actually a walk down memory lane because I ran into my childhood neighbor's parents. I ran into my history teacher. So it was actually a fun blast from the past for me. But other than that, I mean, there's actually already in the morning some pretty heavy turnout. And it looks like that race will go, Republican will go for Barbara Comstock. But yeah, we'll see. Again, it's fortunate to be one of the few sort of exciting House races going on right now.
My trip to the polls was pretty uneventful. We went as a family. And so with two small kids, they behaved very well. That was good. Very low numbers of people at the polls. We're in a different congressional district. And that is not expected to be all that competitive. That might be one of the reasons for the lower turnout. The one optimistic sign I saw outside, because usually they have the people from both parties handing out the sample ballots, only the Republicans bothered to show up in my precinct. So not sure how much those people, how much difference those people make. But if they do, then slight tip of the hat to the GOP for getting out there and making sure everybody has a chance to see the sample ballot from their perspective. So on to the double good martini here. The only bad twist to this is that it's coming out here in the last couple days of the campaign rather than the last few weeks, although some of this was known, certainly the Kay Hagan story. Let's start with her. This is from hotair.com. For about 20 minutes, just after midnight Sunday morning, the Charlotte Observer published a story detailing the apparent conflict of interest, which could represent a violation of ethics by embattled Senator Kay Hagan. The story revealed the details of an investigation into Hagan's family, which received hundreds of thousands of dollars in stimulus grants, grants which Hagan voted for as a member of the U.S. Senate. According to the Fox affiliate there, the state of North Carolina is going to launch an investigation into Hagan's family to determine if they benefited from the senator's conflict of interest. File that one away in a state where the Senate race is very close, but Democrats are believed to have a slight edge. And let's move to another one up in New Hampshire. This is from the Daily Caller. Democratic New Hampshire Senator Jean Shaheen was principally involved in a plot with Lois Lerner and President Barack Obama's political appointee at the IRS to lead a program of harassment against conservative nonprofit groups during the 2012 election. The memo obtained by the Daily Caller briefed the Democratic senator about a coordinated IRS Treasury Department plot to target political activity by nonprofit 501c4 groups. The plot was operating out of Lois Lerner's tax-exempt government entities division. So not only is Jean Shaheen up to her neck in it, but it also exposes the executive branch's tentacles being involved with this from the Treasury Department, i.e. the White House, just as we suspected. So, Andrew, again, would have been great if these had been known about a couple of weeks ago with some more publicity, but at least it's out there now.
Yeah, I mean, can't wait to send these people back to the Senate, can't you? No. But whether it's Hagan or Shaheen, I guess the most important thing to take away from this is if the Republicans do capture the Senate, it's these sorts of issues that they will now be able to investigate. You know, the House has done what it can in investigating everything from the IRS to Benghazi to all these other issues that have come up. You know, even the stimulus situation with Hagan raises some eyebrows about what's going on there. Or were there other situations like this where lawmakers were benefiting? It's good news in the sense that it should raise voters' attention and concern about all the sort of murkiness that has been going on, and knowing that today, if you're catching wind of this today, it's not too late to do something about it, to either replace the senators or the people that have been involved in this stuff, but also to create a legislative body, an investigative body that can look into these sorts of issues. We'll see how many of those remaining undecideds there were that this will sway, or how many people this will compel to actually get out the vote. But for Republicans, it's a little late. It's even later than an October surprise. It's a November surprise, I guess. But, you know, it helps your cause.
in a race where New Hampshire, in some of these polls, even Brown's got a 1 or 2 point lead before this story broke. So if one of the two goes to the Republicans, my bet would be New Hampshire. But can't really figure out whether a story breaking this late makes that big of a difference and how many people will actually hear it. So
multiple things you read and people you talk to say that North Carolina and even New Hampshire are sort of Democrats' firewall. They know if those go, they know they're in trouble. And, you know, those are on the East Coast. So we will know pretty early. We won't have to stay up all night for Alaska, let's say. So again, are these specific stories going to completely change the tone of the race? No, but it does continue to add to the picture of, do you want to send Democrats back to the Senate?
All right, on to the bad martini now. And it was just yesterday that the good martini for Jim and I was Tavis Smiley on Face the Nation saying, look, I'm not telling blacks and Hispanics not to vote Democratic, but you got to ask the question, what have they actually gotten by voting Democratic? You've got a horrible black unemployment rate. It's not much better for Hispanics. They're constantly being told to let some other interest group or demographic ahead of them in line for a special attention or treatment from the administration. So there's not a lot of reasons for them to be fired up for Democrats. And so, Andrew, you would think the Democratic response would be, oh, that's just not true. Look at all these things, all these reasons why we're the party that African-Americans and Hispanics should gravitate towards. That was not, however, the explanation given by First Lady Michelle Obama on the TV One program hosted by Roland Martin.
And that's my message to voters. This isn't about Barack. It's not about the person on the ballot. It's about you. And for most of the people that we're talking to, a Democratic ticket is the clear ticket that we should be voting on, regardless of who said what or did this. That shouldn't even come into the equation. Voting is critical no matter who's on the ballot.
All right, let's check it off here. Let's see what we're not supposed to pay attention to if you're a black voter. A, the president. B, the person whose name is on the ballot. C, what anyone has said. D, what anyone has done. So other than that, pay attention all you want.
I used to have a college roommate who was a bit of a party animal. You know, he'd always get himself into trouble, and he'd always say, hey, don't judge me on what I do or say. And I'd always say, what are we supposed to judge you on then? But it just shows desperate times call for desperate measures. They're not even proud of the candidates they're putting forward. They're more concerned about getting elected, and they're just saying, just vote for anyone with a D next to their name. It doesn't matter what they've done. It doesn't matter who they are. I mean, at that point, what's the point of even having a campaign? You know, if it just matters, what's next to their name, then we all could have saved ourselves a lot of time and money.
I've always had this idea, and I'm sure nobody likes it, but I'll run it past you anyway, that every name should be on the ballot with no party label, and it should be in alphabetical order, so you can't just figure out the person in one column and just go all the way down. You should actually have to understand the races.
I'm open to something like that, and there are some states that I do have an issue where they have straight ticket balloting where basically you just cross, you know, D or R at the top, and it kind of automatically fills out the rest of the ballot for you with those. And I think that is a little dangerous because, again, you don't have to know anyone that's there. You just have to know the letter. And so I do think what you're saying would be an interesting route to go. We just have to see if people are up to that, to sort of becoming the informed citizenry that would require.
Something tells me if photo ID has become a major controversy, that one's not going to be real welcome in some political corners either. But a guy can dream.
And you do see, and you do have nonpartisan elections, whether it's judges or you know, even your local sort of municipality or whatnot, that are totally nonpartisan. So admittedly, I know there have been times where I just have no idea who I'm voting for, or and so that way I just don't. But, you know, I could easily see people eeny, meeny, miny, mowing it. And those results are sort of hard to live with sometimes. So it's an interesting idea, and I kind of like it, but obviously, like you said, there would be people that would take issue with it.
Certainly. All right. On to the crazy martini now. And this is written by some guy named Andrew Johnson over at National Review with a look at the Alaska Senate race. And essentially, to sum it up here, Andrew, it's if at first you can't convince people to vote for you, distract them by convincing them to vote for somebody other than the person you're actually worried about losing to. It was essentially Mark Begich is losing in most of the polls to Dan Sullivan. So instead of trying to make a convincing argument for himself, he's spending time boosting the Libertarian candidate in the race in an attempt to siphon off some votes from Sullivan. So fill in some of the details here and just how much this smacks of desperation.
Basically, the plan is Begich isn't necessarily trying to get votes for himself. The plan is just to make sure that Dan Sullivan, the Republican, doesn't get any votes. By giving the Libertarian candidate there, whose name is Mark Fish, which is a great name, airtime and mentioning him in ads and trying to push to make sure that he's included in debates, he's basically just trying to see if he can get some shaky Sullivan voters to make that have some Libertarian tendencies to vote Libertarian, to raise awareness of this Libertarian candidate. And yeah, I mean, it screams of desperation. He knows he doesn't have a strong enough base to propel him to victory. So Begich is trying to pry those away from Sullivan. And Alaska is, you know, a Libertarian frontier mindset of enough state. But we'll see if it has any impact. But in my reporting of this, I basically found that Mark Begich has spent more money advertising Mark Fish than Mark Fish has.
You got to wonder about some of these Libertarians as potential stalking horses. I mean, you're back in Virginia now. We've got this guy, Robert Sarvis, who ran as a Libertarian for governor. Now he's running for Senate. When he was running for governor, he was a Libertarian for higher taxes and Medicaid expansion. Go figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually kind of funny, too, because what Mark Fish, without getting too much into Alaska Libertarian Party politics, he didn't actually even win the Libertarian primary. This other guy did. And he ended up dropping out, and Libertarians were upset because they thought he was actually a GOP plant. He was kind of an unknown, but he somehow won, you know, what you can imagine was a very contentious primary. So when he withdrew, they picked Fish, who finished second in the primary, to go. And when I actually spoke with Mark Fish, and he basically says, as long as someone's saying his name, he doesn't mind it. He said he wasn't going to denounce Begich's advocacy of him, even though he said other than surveillance, which is the main thing that Begich is trying to promote Fish on, they don't agree on anything else. Fish has been in Libertarian circles for a while. I think he's genuine, but I think you are right. There are circumstances where it seems like that's what these candidates are only looking to sort of serve as that role, sort of the spoiler role.
All right, real quick. Andrew, yesterday, Jim and I basically came to the same conclusions. It'll be Republicans plus 8 by the time all votes are said and done. Even if there are runoffs, eventually it'll be a 53-47 Republican Senate. We basically thought that Democrats would hold North Carolina, New Hampshire, and pick up Kansas, since Orman will most certainly caucus with the Democrats. But we pretty much had the Republicans running the table the rest of the way. What's your gut feeling?
Not to make for uneventful podcasting, but I actually had the exact same thing right in front of me. I think we could be in for a relatively long night, because what I said earlier is I think if North Carolina and New Hampshire go, we know it's a good Republican year. We know Republicans are taking the Senate. If that goes the way we all seem to expect it will, that Democrats will hold on, then we'll have to wait later into the night. We'll have to see how Iowa unfolds. We'll have to see how Colorado unfolds. Kansas, is Roberts going to be able to hang on? By the time we get to Alaska, I think we should have a pretty good sense, especially if Alaska is a few days from now. but we may know outright, too. But yeah, I agree with you guys. I think sort of taking the rolling average of how I've felt over the past week, I've kind of settled on that split.
All right. Well, good. We have consensus. So we'll either all be geniuses or all be something other than geniuses. Andrew, thanks for being with us today. Get a little bit of sleep tonight, and I'll talk to you tomorrow when we actually have some results.
Sounds good. Take it easy. Happy Election Day.
Thank you. You too. Andrew Johnson of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.